Oh, Andy's got his hand up. Andy.
Yeah, just to, also to just say the same thing as Pat, actually, about John Pilger. My dad wasn't a socialist, really. He was sort of Labour Party man, and my mum was far from a socialist, even though, well, she's still alive now, but she's very much sort of shocked by the goings on in Gaza, and very much takes the back of the Palestinian cause, really. My mum's an Irish woman, and in Ireland, the Palestinian cause is a very popular one. But yes, I remember my dad had a book that we didn't have many books in our house, but one of the books we had was it was a sort of compendium of articles by John Pilger with a white cover and a picture of John Pilger with long hair on the cover. And I remember reading it, actually. I was encouraged to read very young. And this was one of the books I read. And his articles were very, very stirring, really, you know, for a young boy to read. So, yeah, it's a shame that he hasn't been remembered more widely, and his death hasn't been made more sort of publicised, really. He's well worth reading. There's another journalist. I'm not sure what people in the party think about him, but who also died, I think, fairly recently, maybe a couple of years ago, maybe not at such a great age. A chap called Robert Fisk, who also covered conflict situations. And he wrote very well, I think, anyway, on those things. Thanks, Pat. Thanks for that. Oh, another thing, Pat, if you're still hearing me, and I'm sorry to take this little bit of the meeting over, but I think it was Howard earlier asked if it would be possible for our comrade in Poland, Mariek, known as Mark to us, to give us an overview of, you know, his perception of the political sort of change of colours in Poland. And I think we've got a meeting, haven't we, in the next week or two, the central branch. So Mark speaks very eloquently at central branch meetings.
Yeah, our meeting is the second Sunday, Andy.
Yeah, so that would be good to pick that up with Mark at that stage. Sorry, I think I've hogged things a bit tonight, so thanks for putting up with me.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else? Just to, while there's nobody with their hands up, just to return to a point I made earlier that, it wasn't really my point, to be honest, it was The Economist's point, but I thought it was interesting. This thing about the number of people voting next year as compared to, you know, who was able to vote in the early 20th century. So, to be fair, they were saying, well, look, you know, a lot of these elections are not real elections, because autocrats like to play pretend, you know, for the sake of legitimacy. They like to play pretend, but, you know, so, you know, places like Belarus, it's a joke democracy. It's not real. You can probably say that about Russia as well, because Putin keeps jailing all his opponents. So, you know, there's no free elections in Russia. You know, he's his biggest opponents in a bloody gulag. So, but, you know, even in spite of that, you know, does anyone think it's sort of particularly, I don't know, noteworthy that we've got a record number of voters? You know, 4.2 billion. And India, of course, will be voting in 2024, and they've got more voters than America, or the USA and the EU combined, sort of they're having an election next year. Although India is, like the United States, classified as a flawed democracy. So I don't know. Has anybody wanted to take me up on that? Or the situation in Taiwan, which, of course, we haven't looked at, and that's been a developing situation. But, well, you can come back to that but if you want to later, but Howard's got his hand up, so let's go to Howard.
Yes, Paddy, it is noteworthy. Things move very, very slowly, don't they? And they go back a bit before they sort of move forward and so on. And it is noteworthy that there are, you know, more people going to vote this year than have ever voted before. Okay, it's untidy and it's completely unsatisfactory, obviously, but it's better than it was. I mean, you know, it's not a situation you could have imagined, say, 50 years ago or even some 20, 25 years ago. So I think it's something to which we should be, you know, modestly gratified about, despite the sort of uncertainties and the fact that quite a few of these elections are foregone conclusions or won't make any significant difference. And I mean, okay, Belarus is a joke. Actually, I don't know if people noticed. I read in the paper today that. Lukashenko has just passed a law, he's had a law passed whereby former presidents of Belarus cannot be prosecuted for anything at all after they leave the presidency. Great, isn't it? So that place is a bit of a joke from the point of view of democracy, but quite a few others aren't. And, things are, I always think that you've got to see the wider picture. I mean, there are some really sort of dismal things happening in the world and that keep happening that, broadly speaking, I still think that things are, if you like, sort of moving in a positive rather than a negative direction overall, over a period of time. At any given time, you might say, God, there's a disaster here, disaster there. What a system we're living in. We are, it's true. But nevertheless, If you look at the broad overall picture, you may well get a different view. I do anyway.
Okay, thanks, Howard. Just as you mentioned, we were just mentioning Belarus, but if you remember that election from a couple of years ago, it should have been a landslide for his opposition. And in fact, according to the polls, the pre-election polls, it was going to be a landslide. And then it turned out to be, 85% vote? Allegedly for Lukashenko, so so I think he can pass all the damn laws he wants, but he's on thin ice in Belarus. He's only got Putin backing him, and Putin's got other problems right now. So I think if the opposition ever takes over in Belarus, they'll change that law right back again as fast as you can say prosecution. Anyway, back to Andy again.
I'd just like to back up what Howard was saying, really, that two things struck me, actually, on that question about more people voting. To me, just speaking personally for myself, I mean, of course it's a good thing. Who would argue against that? And I would also back Howard in making the claim, despite my socialist credentials, that life has never been better for the majority of people on the planet ever. Now, the corollary of that is to ask a question: is what some people, some former fellow travellers of mine from many, many years ago would have called bourgeois democracy, what, mainstream commentators call liberal democracy, merely a coping strategy for the profit system? Or, can I come back on myself on that, or is it actually that people are wising up, people really are wising up, but they just don't see the practical alternative? I'll finish there, thanks.
Okay, thanks. Well, that is, as they say, the $64,000 question, isn't it? I suppose what we would have to say is, well, whichever it is, it's, you know, the world is in a better situation if the people in it have actually got the vote than if they haven't got the vote. So, you know, so on that metric, you know, we would have to say, well, you know, things are broadly speaking looking up. Or, but whether life is better now than it's been in the past, I still think it strongly depends on where you live. It's probably better for Westerners than it's ever been in the past, but I can think of quite a few places in the world where it's probably much worse than it's ever been. So yeah, I think it really depends. Joel, do you want to say something?
Yeah, it's just going back to Belarus. Is it Lukashenko, the premier?
Yeah.
I mean, at the height of COVID, he was sort of saying it's all hysteria, wasn't he? And he was quite happy to have football matches and crowds sort of and I think he ended up catching COVID. But yeah, just another facet of his behaviour.
Right, okay, well, chalk that up as a major failure for the virus then, that it didn't polish that guy off. Any other thoughts? Oh, John, yeah, carry on.
Yes, I think you could say that society in most places is kind of blundering and staggering about to something that's possibly going to be better, but people are just not sure of what that actually is. And I think it's really a matter of people at the moment don't trust the politicians, quite rightly so. But they can't see any real means of putting something in its place. And I think a lot of that is to do with a lifetime of not being consulted, a lifetime of being encouraged to defer to your so-called, they don't call them betters nowadays, but that's what they mean, people that know better, either so-called experts or the politicians, because you hear people saying things like, well, that's what we pay them to do. Well, we don't pay them. The capitalists pay them to do that. We as a class, perhaps, sadly, vote for them. But that's not the same as paying for them. That's giving them support that, from the point of view of our interests, obviously, is not justified. I think once people start trusting their own judgment rather than and it has to be an informed judgment, which people are increasingly becoming more informed. If they're willing to trust their own informed judgment rather than these clever people that think they can run things, and who are these clever people anyway? They're people like, well, to name some of the worst examples, we've got Boris Johnson, Liz Truss, Donald Trump, the orange-faced Boyd, you know, people that, you know, you should obviously be suspicious of how any amount of people in the United States who work for a living can imagine that a billionaire, never mind a lunatic billionaire like Donald Trump, has got their interests at heart. It's just a complete and utter mystery to me. I think it was Howard earlier who said he's quite perplexed by how people could support that. I too find it, even just from the nuisance value of him becoming president again, it would just be irritating every day to hear, oh, here's the latest thing they're spending time talking about, the doings of Donald Trump, that madman. I hope something seriously wrong happens to him. Because it does look sadly like he might get in again. And although, as we say, it doesn't make all that much difference, well, in his case, he's a phenomenon. And, you know, it does make a difference, I would say, at least to the nuisance value and all sorts of decisions that might be quite erratic. You know, so although to be the President of the United States, you have to be some sort of bastard on behalf of the capitalist class, nevertheless, one that's on the right side of sanity, you might say, you know, maybe would be easier to cope with. It's just a horrible, horrible situation that even members of the capitalist class must be tearing their hair out at the antics of Trump. You know, I mean, he just brought a couple of hundred years of American history down the drain with an idiot like that in the White House. But I've veered off onto Trump, and I meant to say something more general, but I just couldn't. One good thing is these two states have, at the moment, said he shouldn't be on the ballot, and it's up to the Supreme Court to tell them why not, because it's quite clear that the 14th Amendment, Section 3 of it, seems to say that any officer of the United States can't seek office, stand for office again, if they've been guilty of insurrection or sedition against the United States government. So, and it's meant to be something that isn't meant to be pored over by lawyers. The Constitution's meant to be a straightforward textual reading. That's what they say, but then once the lawyers and the Supreme Court get hold of it, then the politics will come into play. But I've veered off the subject I was originally talking about, so I'll shut up for the time being. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, John. Well, I mean, do feel free to come back when you've thought of what it was that you were going to say in the first place. So, meanwhile, Joel has got his hand up.
Yeah, this is something John's mentioned about sort of like people not trusting politicians. And I think the key, well, as John mentioned also, the key is that they don't become apathetic and just give up. And because these people who are supposed to know and have let them down. And that's the, I think that's a sort of key point that they're encouraged to sort of like question the politicians and the system and start working towards doing things in their own interests. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Joel. While nobody's got the hand up, I just thought I might just come back on something John was saying about generally people becoming better informed. It's been much discussed, hasn't it? The problem of the information revolution is that people are now, you know, faced with an absolute barrage of information, but they can't trust what's true and what isn't anymore. Now you've got AI, you've got fake news, you've got deep fakes, and so much of what goes around on social media. You know, social media is just sort of generally credited with having amplified conspiracy theories, you know, and conspiracy theorists from a sort of little niche camp to a kind of major force. So. So there is that problem, isn't there, in information society of discerning what's real, what you can trust. But I think the only thing we can think about that is, well, people are just going to have to learn to be more critical, rely on their own experience, rely on their own judgments, ask themselves, well, how likely is this really? There have been studies done on this. It turns out, you'll probably not be surprised, that people who used to, before ChatGPT came along, there were whole towns in Eastern Europe where the main source of employment was writing fake news. And their experience was, if they posted fake news items in liberal press or in America, democratic social media circles, they tended to be outed pretty quickly. You know, there would be, you know, someone would go and do a bit of research and say, okay, this is false, this is fake, I've checked this. They tended to do best in Republican or right-wing circles because those particular media tended to believe what they wanted to believe. That, you know, if it agreed with their prejudices, they were happy to believe it without bothering to check it. And there've even been studies showing that people are willing to believe something even though they've been told it's false, if they don't like the person who's told it to them. So we're sort of pushing at the boundaries of how we understand sort of human credulity, a human ability to understand, you know, distinguish between truth and falsehood, because people have a lot of emotional investment in their conception of the truth, and they can't stand the sort of cognitive dissonance of being told something that just jars with their worldview. They would rather keep their worldview and ignore the evidence of what they're being told. And this is becoming a bit of a crisis, I think, when you see things like the Trump, you know, resurgence. You know, after what that guy did, after what that guy said, the amount of times he lied, the amount of charges he's against, the insurrection that he tried to foment, even in spite of that, people want him back, speaks quite heavily to poor Americans. And it's not just poor white Americans. Astoundingly, he's got a lot of support among Latinos, among blacks, among women, these sort of demographics. You know, this speaks quite heavily to people's strong emotional investment in what they believe. And just presenting the facts, you know, studies show it just doesn't work. It doesn't work with conspiracy theorists, and, you know, it appears not to work for voters. But I'll just... The thing that I've always thought is... possibly, you know, because of the capitalist stranglehold on news media, which the internet really should have eroded but hasn't. Instead, it's been the other way around. The capitalist news media have sort of assimilated the internet, assimilated the web, assimilated social media. People are just not seeing alternative visions. They've got no vision of how else society could be. They don't get it in Hollywood. They don't get it in film or TV. They'll get dystopias. That's fine. You can watch all the dystopias you like. But there aren't any alternative viable visions of society that are being put out by a capitalist society. Why would it? Why would it teach us to reject it? So I think it's the lack of vision that people have got that makes them choose Trump, makes them choose Tory or Labour or anything else, because they're not being presented with any alternatives, and unfortunately we're not able to shout loud enough or sort of, you know, put big enough publicity out there to make a difference. Anyway, I'm rambling now, so John, you've thought of what it was you were going to say.
Not quite all of what I was going to say, but I just, in response to something you said there, I did see some ugly manifestation of people, just, you know, the type of people who are likely to, you know, stick to the false notion they have about society, notwithstanding any facts that might be available. So this was a piece of, it was on the rather aptly named Yahoo News, as it turns out. It was one of the comments from somebody who was, the main tenor of the comments was, why is the United States bothered? Why is it going to the United Nations? And it swallowed the Trumpian notion, not just the Trumpian right wing generally, notion that the United Nations is part of a big conspiracy to stop the United States from doing good things in the world, to put it simply. And this guy actually chanted in it was quite disgusting just reading it. He said, since when has the United States had to ask permission to blow anyone out of the water or out of the air? And then he finished this by saying, you know, and I could just imagine these horrible voices saying, USA, USA, chanting it. And he said he chanted it three times in print. And that was quite bad enough. It just made me feel like, well, I could imagine hearing it, like I've heard it so many times. It's just one of the things I hate, because it's symptomatic of people that don't have much understanding. They like to chant things over and over again. And whether that's in relatively harmless situations, a football match, or whether it's to do with leaders that are supposed to lead you to the promised land, or whether it's in support of a country that you imagine belongs to you, it's just very, very sad. And very annoying, quite frankly, that people get carried away to this extent. I find that quite disgusting. But, you know, the world is gradually, I think, moving towards something better. But the unfortunate thing is there are so many things wrong that we could run horribly out of time. And this is why it's still urgent for us to advocate as vociferously as we can, the case for world revolution. David Cameron started making saber-rattling noises towards the Houthis. And another thing that he said that was to do with being sick to the stomach, that was what he said, about people who had a criminal conviction, and usually petty kind of convictions that a member of the working class might have, not some sort of genocidal maniac that might rule a country, but just the little crimes that workers commit. David Cameron said he was sick to the stomach. Well, here's something to make you really sick to the stomach, Mr. Cameron. We want a revolution, a world revolution, and I think that should make you even more sick to the stomach. But the serious point behind that, because we can all agree with that, no bother, but the serious point behind all that is that the reason I want Trump out the way is because of the bad effect that he's had on American workers, many of whom have gone to jail because they were stupid enough to believe him and to go and commit insurrection and sedition against their so-called country. And he's just getting off scot-free from this. So it's not that I have any respect for particular capitalist laws, because the capitalist class often have used the excuse that, oh, well, you're a lawbreaker, you can't stand for Parliament, or you can't stand for this or that. And as the crimes that they're ruling out of order are tiny in comparison to the crimes that they and their class have perpetrated. So it's that's the reason why I think the fact that there's legal possibilities of legal restrictions might turn out to be a good thing, in the sense, you know, that Trump has clearly broken their own laws. You know, I mean, I'm not asking them to enforce their own laws, but I'm just watching with interest whether they will. That's the thing about Trump. But again, I've allowed myself to be. I didn't get to the wider point I intended, so sorry about that.
Okay, yeah, thanks, John. Yeah, mentioning David Cameron. I mean, what a repulsive individual, even by this. I mean, even by the sort of low standards of Tory MPs and prime ministers. What a repulsive man that guy is. Even you know, without taking into account the pig anecdote. Dear me, for Sunak to bring that guy back when he's just generally blamed for causing Brexit. It just shows you how desperate the Tories are. I'll go over to Andy, but there was just one thought I had about this, was that back in 2016 when we had Brexit, we had Boris Johnson, there was Trump got in, suddenly there was a, you know, for better or worse, suddenly the Western world sort of woke up to politics and everyone was talking about it, because it was so ghastly in a way, but in another way, such a sort of carnival of idiocy that everyone was talking about it. Young people were talking about it, people in bus queues, in shops. And, you know, the sort of the pundits are kind of saying, oh, what we want is to go back to a world of boring politics. But, I mean, if you remember boring politics before 2016, well, it was so boring that nobody wanted to talk about it. And that isn't good for us either. So I don't know if we, you know, there was an upside to having the likes of Trump and Boris Johnson in power, just because it motivated people to think about what was going on in the world in a way that boring politics just doesn't. But that's one of those, I think that's one of those be careful what you wish for type situations, so I'm not going to wish for a return to that. Anyway, over to Andy.
All I would like to say really on some of this is I don't disagree actually with anything that comrades have been saying, you know, about the likes of Trump and Cameron, you know, and you may say that politics was boring before Boris came along, before Trump came along. But it wasn't that boring for most people who were trying to scrape a living, because that was when they brought in austerity in the UK and most of the US and most Western countries. It was pretty shit, basically. You know, people hadn't really got any energy to do anything much at all because capitalism was on the floor. But I do disagree with John on something. I mean, you know, I don't disagree with anything you say about Donald Trump, but I don't agree with him being banned from standing to be an elected official. I think that's quite a dangerous road to go down, to be quite honest. So I would certainly not agree with that from a, you know, not about Donald Trump, but from a more kind of philosophical perspective. I think we're on very dodgy ground if we start to agree with that sort of stance. And the other thing, I mean, I think it's just probably just sort of a bit of banter that's going on, but I'm hearing a little bit of schadenfreude about Brexit. I mean, I wasn't a fan of Brexit, or I'm not a fan of the European Union either, but what was so bad about Brexit as opposed to the European Union? You know, I think we just need to be a bit careful sometimes in the way we approach these things. Thanks.
Okay. Well, I can tell you one thing that was bad about Brexit, which was that both sides in the Brexit debate were lying through their teeth all the way through it. And it makes me worry. And what I worry about the democratic project, if you like, is it doesn't work if the people who are voting are just being lied to. And we see that. I think it was particularly egregious in the case of the Brexit debate, you know, on both sides. You know, the Brexiteers were making all sorts of ludicrous promises. I mean, not remember that notorious bus episode? The Boris Johnson later said, oh, well, it was nothing to do with me, was it, that bus? I just happened to be standing in front of it. The statement it was making, that was nothing to do with me, you know. So, and on the other side, you had Project Fear, they were trying to terrify people into, you know, if we leave the EU, we'll go straight back to the Stone Age kind of thing. You know, it was all lies, and we said that as a party at the time. We said both sides are as bad as each other, and that was what was particularly awful about that. that episode. And I do worry, you know, I think the basis of our case is that people can make informed decisions. Well, they can't make informed decisions when they're being bullshitted from all sides like they are there. And we know that we're not being told the truth about most things. You can see that in war situations. You know, even now, the Western media are trying to maintain a pretense that Ukraine is doing well in that war. You know, they'll say, well, okay, things have slowed down. You know, they'll never say, you know, they've got zero chance. They're not going to win. They won't admit it. You look at other people's news media and they'll say, well, look, they've got no chance now. You know, the same thing about Israel. So we know that there's a huge amount of dishonesty, and I worry, you know, it just makes me think, you know, if the basis of our case, you know, parliamentary road to socialism relies on informed decision, and we're not seeing any informed decision. We're seeing fake news. We're seeing demagogues and populists who will just lie through their teeth with absolutely no shame, no scruples whatsoever. It just kind of makes me wonder, well, what chance have we got? But that's a bit of a depressing thought, so I will stop there and let John take over. John.
Yes, I think the whole Brexit thing, and for years, well, for all of our lives, actually, this will come as no surprise to any of you, that we've been suffering from fake news our whole lives. The sort of things that our bosses consider are news, things that we should hear about, are all carefully considered. I mean, it's no accident that the news agenda is virtually the same on all channels. Why is that? I mean, it's not like they all get together and sit down and decide, right, we're going to have this item for news and that. It's just by a kind of consensus. They don't even need to speak to one another to know what are going to be the news items for the class that they represent. And, of course, many of them don't even necessarily think of themselves as representing a class. They just think they're doing the normal and natural thing. You can tell by the way these people speak. Some of these BBC people, they just think it's normal and natural to think the absurd thoughts that they spout on the airwaves. So, yeah, this is a really unfortunate thing that people have had to face. But on the question of people violating laws and therefore being debarred from office, I think I was just really drawing more the comparison between some people who have quite outrageously broken laws. Like if in this country we incited as individuals people to riot, then we might well be debarred as individuals from standing at an election, maybe for a specific time or maybe indefinitely. I'm not sure what the laws would say, but there's a thing called inciting or action liable to cause a breach of the peace. And sorry to harp on about Trump again, but you know, that he was doing something much, much more than that. And it's not that I value the laws of the United States. It's that I value the heads of our fellow wage slaves, no matter how stupid they are. I would hope that they would learn without having their heads bashed in by agents of the state when they resort to acts of insurrection. So that was really the point I was making. I wouldn't advocate banning anyone from standing in election, really. But in Trump's case, maybe I'd like to see that happening. But because people have taken a rational approach to the fact that this man is just beyond the pale. So I hope that maybe clarifies what I was trying to get at. What I'm trying to get at is something that you cannot have. You can't have a reasonable situation in this madhouse called capitalism.
Okay, thanks, John. Freddie, you got your hand up?
Yeah, okay, yeah. John's opening remarks there about being lied to, etc. I mean, some of why here tonight you think this was something new. We've been lied to for years upon years upon years upon years. Now, the extent of it varies maybe from time to time. But the working class have been getting lied to for as long as any of us here can remember, through the media, etc. It's much more prevalent, it's much more readily recognisable, I think, these days, with the way the means of communication have come about. And it's not easy. I well remember your good self, Paddy. It must be a couple of years ago now, you wrote an article, and in it you mentioned Brandolini's Law. Now, I'd never heard of Brandolini's Law before, so I looked it up, and it was actually quite fascinating, really. I can't remember it verbatim now, of course, but it was a bit basically to the effect that sometimes it's pretty hard to counteract the bullshit that we're given. That's what it amounted to. They're pretty hard, that the effort you've got to put into to counteracting bullshit is hard. And this is where the likes of Trump and such like comes into it. And I wouldn't entirely disagree with John's point of view either on this question of individuals like Trump. If we were looking to a socialist society, and you're talking about using laws, etc., now whether or not the laws as we know it within socialism, but surely there would certainly be some standards of conduct that people would need to engage in or should be engaging in. And if those standards of conduct had been violated to the detriment of the society that we want, then there needs to be some form of action somewhere or other. Now, even in a socialist society, I can't imagine a world where there's no murder going on somewhere. What would happen to somebody then that murders somebody for some reason or other, even in a social society? Are they just allowed to get away with it then? No, of course not. So where people like Trump, et cetera, are coming along inviting this sort of insurrections, et cetera, that's going on, even in a social society, then they would get away with that. There would be no impunity. There'd be no sort of action to be taken against individuals like that. Well, in my mind, I think there would be action, some form of actions getting taken against them. So John puts up a fair point, and I say in terms of that Brandolini's Law, you know, I'll need to go back and look at it again. But you know, I mean, I can get quite depressed at times when I listen to some of what's been said. There's almost a sense of hopelessness. Well, I don't have any sense of hopelessness. Yes, it's disappointing we're not further ahead from where we should be, but it's not a hopeless situation that we're in. We'll keep fighting. We need to look and develop ways of trying to get our case across stronger than what we have done. But guys like Trump, no time for him. And whatever, if he gets barred, then so be it. Probably done the working class a favour getting barred. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Freddie. Just for your general delight in information, Brandolini's Law is also known as the bullshit asymmetry principle, and it states that the amount of energy needed to refute bullshit is an order of magnitude bigger than that needed to produce it, which kind of means that the fake newsers and the conspiracy theorists have always got a jump on the rest of us, because it's a lot less effort for them to make this shit up than it is for us to refute it. So there you go, that's Brandolini's Law. Definitely one worth remembering. Thanks for reminding me, Freddie.
I'll go back to it again, Paddy. I can remember it all off the top of my head.
Okay.
But worthwhile. Thank you.
Okay. Andy, up again.
Yeah, it's an interesting sort of little contest, actually, here now. All I was really wanting to point out was that, much as I absolutely loathe Donald Trump as much as any of us do, you see, we have to be very careful We criticise people like Putin for banning his opponents. Now, I know that the odds against us are completely different in terms of Trump versus the SPGB. But from if we look at it sort of from a rational I'm being a bit philosophical here, okay? I'm not a philosopher, but I'm just looking at it from that perspective. From a Greek philosopher's perspective, if somebody knows anything about Greek philosophy, we shouldn't be saying that this man is beyond the pale. This man cannot be, equal to us in a political contest, in a democratic election. Otherwise, what are we saying? We're sort of getting into league with the Leninists, and I really have a problem with that. So I know I'm being very utopian, perhaps, on that point, and I'm probably a lone voice, but I just think we have to be careful here. I really do. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Andy. Just if I can just put my two penny thing. I don't think you are a lone voice there, Andy. I think probably most of us would agree with you. I think, recall the old adage that a country, a population gets the government it deserves. And, really, if you either trust democracy or you don't. And really, if democracy was working properly in the States, Trump would have absolutely zero chance. So it's a reflection on that society that he stands a chance of being elected. And, I think in any decent democracy, there'd be no question of banning people because from standing, whatever they'd done. You'd expect the voters to ban them, essentially, by not voting for them. That's what you'd want, and that's what you'd expect. And if that doesn't happen in America, well, I think that says a lot about America. Okay, anyway, enough rant from me. Pat's up next. Pat?
Sorry, I'd taken off, well, for two reasons. One, I was really ready to say goodnight, and the other thing, after a time, it hurts my ear. So what I started off by saying was that I would rather Margaret Thatcher had lost at the ballot box than the way she did. And but there are concerns of what might happen with Trump, how popular he is. Because the puzzle is his popularity or support in the Republican Party. But apparently, I can't now remember the details quite who they were, but a particular group of I don't know if it was the senior people in the Republican Party, but they supported Trump, and those that didn't were threatened in some way and were coerced by Trump, the money he's got in order to do these things. So he doesn't behave in a democratic way. But I can appreciate what Andrew says about not wanting to sort of ban people from taking part. On the other hand, he did support insurrection, and you feel that the legal process seems to have been so slow in as it is indeed here over some things, but the legal process seems to have been so slow with dealing with the things that he's been charged with. And whilst you wouldn't want things to be as in Russia, where opposition are put in prison and they don't give the obvious reason for it and come up with some other reasons for it. But I don't entirely feel happy with what Andrew said, but on the other hand, I can't really. In the odd position, I can't really sort of disagree with it from a sort of democratic point of view, but I can't help feeling that there might be bigger problems from him being legally banned than if he is allowed to stand. But it just seems sort of strange sort of times when the Democrats are having Biden carrying on, and you know, what difference one president makes from another one. I'd rather have a statesman than a clown to listen to. Anyway, that's about it. And as one or two others have said, I'm rambling on, so I'll stop and say good night. That's it from me.
Thanks, Pat. I suppose it just is worth pointing out that this ruling by the Supreme Courts in Colorado and Maine is very likely to be overturned by the federal Supreme Court. That's the expectation. So they're not really expecting that this is going to stick. Partly because the federal Supreme Court has been sort of loaded by Trump people in the past. But saying that, it is the Supreme Court. They can't be seen to be that biased. They got to find good legal reason for knocking these decisions down. So, it might well be that they take the same view that Andy takes. That in fact, there is no law in the states about running for election, even if you're in jail. We know that that's what Eugene Debs did back in, was it 1913, something like that. And so they take their idea of democracy, at least on paper, pretty seriously in the states. And they may well take the same view. And just one other thing that occurs to me now is, we talk about Geert Wilders and the far right and what's his name in Orban in Hungary, they're pretty far right, but how many actual overtly fascist stroke Nazi countries are there in the world at the moment, amongst countries where there's even the sort of reasonable semblance of voting? How many are there? Well, none. Is that because all those countries have banned anyone from standing who had those views? Well, generally, no. It's because the voters won't stand for it, because nobody can forget the last 100 years. Nobody can forget the Second World War. Voters will just not put up with that sort of politics now, I think. And that's your sort of last line of defence, really. I think that, voters will vote far right. They'll vote for all sorts of wacky things and even clowns sometimes. But there's a point beyond which you can't push modern populations. And I think I think the line is very definitely drawn before you get to fascism. Because we've had these debates in the party before. Party members have sort of said, "Oh, well, there are certain countries that are fascist," and we've sort of debated this. But really, by the classical definition of fascism, Nazism, there isn't anyone like out there, and in this country, no one like that would stand a chance of being elected. I can remember the BNP being elected to the council down the road from me in Burnley, not very far away. Three BNP members were elected, and none of the rest of the council would work with them. They just had a hands-off policy. These BNP councillors achieved absolutely nothing all their entire office, except to rant occasionally, and were booted out by the voters at the next possible opportunity. So, I think we can say there's an awful lot wrong with democracy, or bourgeois democracy, if we call it that. But I think there is a line, and voters won't go over it, generally. At least, hopefully not. Anyway, sorry, Andy, did you have your hand up again?
Yeah, just a quickie, really. We don't really diverge a lot, really, John and myself, Paddy, Pat, anybody that's commented on this. But, somebody, I'll borrow the phrase, used the term, which I really like, and it's the only court that matters is the court of public opinion and the court of public democracy. And there does seem to be a trend in probably Western democracy, certainly in this country anyway, that any sort of policy decision by the elected government, and I know this sort of government that we have at the moment sort of like tenuously elected, really, especially in terms of the third prime minister in, I don't know, like 2 years or something. But the recourse to the courts, you know, to challenge things, even on appalling policies like the Rwanda policy, which we all know about, and it's just an awful, evil, horrible policy. But ultimately, they're the elected government. And therefore, you know, this idea that they go to these Supreme Court judges to sort of rectify this situation for people who don't like it, I don't agree with that. And, you know, there's a lot I don't agree with. And there's lots of reasons I'm a member of the Socialist Party, you know, for obvious reasons. But I think one thing we shouldn't tamper with is the notion of real democracy. It's very, very important. And if that means you get a Donald Trump or a Bolsonaro or whoever he is or some other idiot, well, that's just too bad. You know, it's our own fault. And that's just how it has to be. And it's too important to tamper with. So that's the point I was really trying to make.
Right, OK, thanks. So we've got John... Joel first, and then John. I should remind you, it's 9:30 now, and Pat wants to go to bed, so maybe we can think about sort of wrapping this up. Okay, Joel.
I'm probably labouring the point because other people have spoken on it, but it's just that Andrew sort of says tampering with democracy. I mean, who does he mean? Does he mean everybody? Is he... which includes the members of the Socialist Party. I mean, it's I'm a bit puzzled, to be honest. When he starts saying tampering with democracy, I mean, it's not something the Socialist Party does. Thank you.
Okay, John next.
Yes, I'm not going to go into it. It's quite a wide discussion, this thing about people being barred from office, and I don't really advocate that. But in Trump's case, it's just particularly interesting that he has broken laws, and these people are quite self-righteous about the capitalists and their laws. The rule of law they always keep banging on about, except when it applies to them. So, yeah, it's probably... It's a bit like the question of reformism. We're not reformists, but there's certain reforms we maybe wouldn't mind seeing. So there's certain things that might happen, however they happen, that you might wish to see. It doesn't mean that you're going to see it, as I said earlier. But the point I really wanted to make in this little contribution was just a thing that when Paddy mentioned fascism. George Orwell, rather smugly, I think, once said, the reason the troops don't do the goose step in England is because people would laugh. And that is actually true, but not for any smug, clever reasons people might have had, but people did laugh at the Nazis and their stamping about all over the place in Germany and then eventually all over the place throughout Europe. And they got completely out of control. But there were historic reasons why troops just don't stamp about the streets in this country, whereas in certain other countries there is more of a militaristic tradition, and it's considered... I mean, one of the places, long before Trump was ever on the scene, one of the places that has the most flags in the world seems to be the United States. I've never seen so many flags outside of Nazi Germany. Now, that's possibly something to do with the history of that being a relatively new country and the need to instill the nationalist nonsense in people's heads. But, I've not much more than that to say. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, John. Is it now a good point to... Howard's got something to say. Howard.
Sorry, can I just say that in December 2020? Yeah, the month after Trump fell from office, I wrote an article in The Standard entitled A Lesson from Trump. And this is just to agree 100% with what Paddy has just said about things being rather different now than they were in Italy in the 20s and Germany in the 30s, etc. Something I wrote was the following. I wrote, there can be no doubt that on a visceral level, at least, many other workers worldwide felt a sense of relief that the unspeakable individual in charge of America had been dismissed from office. When I wrote to my sister-in-law the same day to wish her a happy birthday, she replied that getting rid of the monster is the best possible present. On a political level, too, many people were relieved in view of the widely expressed claim that if re-elected, Trump would have proceeded to establish some kind of dictatorship, stamping on all dissent and in particular taking draconian measures, Mussolini or even Hitler style, against all progressive forces. Yet could this actually have happened? There is no doubt that Trump showed psychopathic traits similar to dictators like Mussolini, Hitler, Stalin, et cetera, but could he have gone ahead and taken control of the American state in the same way as former dictators have taken over their state and wreaked havoc on those who opposed or who oppose them? And part of the answer, I won't read the whole thing, to that lies in what actually happened in the American elections. He was dismissed from office via that country's democratic electoral processes. And I've ended the article by saying what the example of Trump's fall from office has shown is that in the US, as in other advanced capitalist countries, there is a well-entrenched system of democratic voting in place, which when the time comes can be used by a socialist majority to vote in socialism when the necessary consciousness has spread sufficiently for that to happen. And when it does, no would-be demagogue or dictator will be able to do anything to prevent the majority from making it happen. Okay, that's a sort of slightly different point, I know. But I think that applies 100% to America. It applies to Argentina to a significant extent as well, despite the fact there's a buffoon sort of in power there now. It would apply to the States if Trump were to take power, as he may well.
Okay.
Sorry.
Thanks, Howard. Okay, that's great. Well, I think perhaps on that upbeat note, might be the time to bring this to a close. Is that okay, everybody?
Thanks, Paddy. Thanks very much indeed.
I should just mention that what we've got on next week. I'm just checking actually. So next week is a discussion on state constitutions, paper and reality, from a new member, Uther Naismith. So that'll be next week, January the 12th. So look forward to that, and look forward to seeing you all again soon.
Thanks, Paddy. Thanks, everyone.